Hey Siri, what are your hottest takes?
Nando's is overrated, it's just chicken. I could cook it at home, they even sell the sauce in testers. Like, I could literally make that myself. So why would I pay like 20 quid for basically chicken and chits?
Who would have thought?
Not me.
Cats are better than dogs. Seriously, just don't at me on that one. Why would I want to follow you around a park picking up your litter? That's not fun for anyone. Crocs are actually phenomenally fashionable, as well as being intensely comfortable. Even if you disagree that they are fashionable, you should agree that they should be. Heaven, hell, and other hot takes.
Amazing, whoa! Hey guys, so good to be here this evening. I'm Sam. If we haven't met before, as it feels like most people in the studio tonight, I haven't met you. So I'm Sam. I help lead the student team here. Shout out especially to my Bedminster pop-up, my loyal crew who I've been with, hence why I haven't been here. Lovely to be with you guys tonight. We are taking on the third part of our series, Heaven, Hell, and Other Hot Takes. And in this series, basically, we are looking at those parts of Christianity that are just a little bit spicy. The parts that, if we're honest, can be a little bit uncomfortable. We're not quite sure what to do with. For some of you, you might be Christians here, and there's just parts of the Christian faith that when they come up in conversations, we kind of just shrink away from a little bit. We don't really know how to deal with it. Maybe you're someone, you're watching, or you're in one of our venues tonight, and you're kind of interested in Jesus. You like the sound of him. You think the community sounds cool, but actually, every time you think, oh yeah, I could get into this, there's like a big red flashing siren that goes off like, wait a minute, remember what they think about this and this and this? And there's all these difficult parts of faith that actually we don't want to shy away from. We don't want to just ignore and pretend they're not happening. We want to talk about it. Because actually, we believe that as a church, we can think about these big topics. We can even disagree on them. And so what we're kind of basing the series on is this little teaching that a guy called Paul, who wrote most of the New Testament, gives to a church in Philippians. He says this: all of us then who are mature should take such a view of things. And if on some point you think differently, that too God will make clear to you. Only let us live up to what we've already attained. So basically, for me to paraphrase that, it's, you know, there are some key things. Who Jesus is, the fact that he died and rose again, the things that I've been talking about, then we should be following that. The other stuff, the kind of the things that we're going to disagree on, the things that actually, if you take a poll of Metro as a church or the church around the world, we'll have different views on. That's okay. We can think differently. We've just got to be trying to live following Jesus. We can sum up by saying this, that actually it's okay for us to think differently. We can disagree with each other, but we've got to live differently too. Our lives should look different from just the world around us because we're following Jesus at the center of it all. Now today, we're going to go on. We've been talking about heaven, and we're going to go on to talk about hell next week, but right now we're going to zone in on the Bible, because actually the Bible is kind of the original spicy take in many ways. It's the original, like, there is a lot in there. There's a lot of great stuff. There's a lot of really, really good stuff that can be encouraging and comforting and, you know, that helps us. And we love reading it. We put it on fridge magnets. We tweet it out, all that sort of thing. But there's also a bunch of stuff that's really controversial, right? There's a bunch of stuff that we read and one person will read it this way and this tells me that we must believe this, and another person just completely disagrees. The Bible can't possibly say that. It can cause controversies. It can even, I'm sure at the moment, there are things going on around the world, all different places where actually we can disagree, and the Bible can kind of be at the center of that. If we're not careful, we can even weaponize it to back up our point of view. There's also just places in the Bible where it's just hard to understand, whether it's because it's a bit weird or whether it's because we read it and we don't think it lines up with what we think God is like. How can we read the Bible and see a God who who seems full of vengeance when I believe in a God of love? How can I read the Bible and read about genocide? That doesn't match up with the God that I know. And so the Bible can be really difficult for us to handle. And we tend to have a few different responses to how we go about this. If the Bible can be difficult, one thing we can do is we can choose to follow it to the letter. Now, you might say, I am a Bible-believing Christian. I take the Bible seriously. And that means I follow it to the letter. I'm not sure there's that many of us here who can actually say that because, you know, we do things like wearing clothes with mixed fabrics, which the Bible tells you we shouldn't do. I eat shellfish. Some of us eat pork. All these different things that the Bible says that we shouldn't be doing, if we're honest, we do it. So not many of us are following it to the letter. Probably more of us are picking and choosing. We kind of have the bits of the Bible that we like. We have the bits of the Bible that are kind of, we go back to them time and time again because we just like them. And then those other bits that are a bit more confusing, a bit harder to deal with, we'll just forget about that. And so we pick and choose, but that's not satisfying either because this whole book should be true, right? So surely we shouldn't have to kind of pick out the bits that we like. Instead, I want to today look at how can we do a third way? How can we learn how to read it? How can we learn how to read the Bible in a way that actually not only can we deal with some of the difficult stuff, but actually it can help us grow, look more like Jesus, become mature in our faith? And to do that, we're going to look at a story in the New Testament, in the book of Luke, a biography of Jesus' life, where Jesus meets two guys the day that he's risen from the dead. He goes on a walk with two guys who are asking these questions of how do we understand this stuff. So we pick up the story in Luke 24. It says this, "Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened." Basically, everything that had happened is Jesus has died. "As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked alongside with them. But they were kept from recognizing him." So Jesus walks up, catches up with them, but they don't recognize him. He asked them, "What are you discussing as you walk along together?" Fully well knowing what they were, in fact, discussing as they walked along together. They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" And then Jesus, there's a few times in the story we'll just see the banter version of Jesus, which I love. He's Jesus, he knows what's going on, they don't know who he is, so he goes, what things would those be that have happened in Jerusalem in these days? And they don't know it's Jesus, they're about Jesus of Nazareth. This is the first example of women in the room, I'm sure you've been mansplained to many times before. This is the first instance of Jesus-splaining, where someone explains to Jesus what's happened to Jesus. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what's more, it's the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told him that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see Jesus." So these two disciples, they're heartbroken, they're confused. Jesus is dead. And actually, as we go on to find later, that one of the things that's kind of confusing to them is they don't know how to make sense of this compared to what they've been reading in the scriptures, when they've been reading about this Messiah who was to come, when they've been reading about these promises, and they thought they understood it, and now they're like, I just don't know what to do with this. Jesus turns to them, and he said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken." Basically, you guys are idiots. You don't understand the Bible at all, do you? How you know, these guys, and understand, these guys, I'm using guys in a gender, you know, not a gendered sense. It could have been a husband and a wife, actually. We're not really sure. But these people, they would have known the scriptures. They would have memorized them from a really, really young age. They would have known them inside out. So it's not like they just weren't reading the Bible. Jesus says they're foolish because they don't understand it. And so he goes on to teach them how to read it. He says this. Jesus is walking along with them and he says, "And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was written in all the scriptures." So he's walking along with his disciples and he says, okay, the Bible, let's talk about it. Start at the very beginning. He goes back to Moses. You know, in the Jewish scriptures, you start with the law book, same as we have in the Christian Bible. You have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, Numbers. And these are where we find kind of the laws that came with Moses around what it looks like to follow Jesus. Then it says he goes on and talks about the prophets. And the prophets kind of came next in the Jewish Bible. They were talking about what Israel should become and how they're going wrong and what it's going to look like when the Messiah comes in. And he talks them through this. And it says he goes through all the scriptures. What Jesus does, quite simply, is he talks them through the Bible. And he talks to them, you know, explains this is what's going on. It seems like a really basic idea, but it's really important because if we're honest, when we open the Bible, a lot of us don't really know what's going on any random page that we open up to. I think it's helpful if we just have a little, if you're here and you're a Christian, this might be a bit of a recap. If the Bible's brand new to you, this might be new information. But the Bible is not just one book, it's a library of books. It's all these different books from different authors in different genres, written to different audiences across loads of different countries, in different languages, written across thousands of years. And although every single one of these books is inspired by God, God-inspired, they're written by human hands who have their own intentions for the audience, messages they want to give across. Basically, all of these books have a context. And so if we're going to understand the Bible, if we're going to really learn how to deal with not just the easy bits, but also the difficult bits, we need to read it as it was written. We need to read it as it was written. Basically, read it for the purpose that it was first written, or try and understand at least what that means. Now, if you met a poet now, and he said, and you walked up to him and said, "Oh, I love your articles that you do," he'd be like, "What are you talking about? I wrote poetry. Why are you saying that I'm a journalist? That doesn't make any sense." If I meet King David in heaven, I don't want to go up to him and say, "Hey, King David, loved your articles that you were writing back in the day." He'd be like, "No, they're songs. They're full of meaning and poetry and lyricism." We can kind of just completely read the Bible as this flat, one-dimensional book, when actually it has so many different genres, audiences, contexts. It's important we understand this, because if we don't, we risk making basically big mistakes about what the Bible is saying. We kind of lift up books out of their context and just drop them into 21st century Bristol and expect that the words, devoid of any of their context, although they're still powerful, can mean exactly the same thing without understanding why they were written. An example would be, this time last year, I went to Hannah's parents and told them that I was going to ask Hannah to marry me. Now, if I had been reading my Bible without any context, I may have read the book of Samuel earlier that day. And I wouldn't have known that the book of Samuel is a history of the people of Israel that was written to chronicle this nation that existed thousands of years ago. And I would have read the part of the Bible where Samuel goes to King Saul and says, "I'd like to marry your daughter." And King Saul says, "Okay, then come back with 100 foreskins of my enemies, the Philistines." And Samuel says, "Okay, sure, but in some like foreskin-based flex," he comes back with 200 in like a sack or something like that and puts them in front of King Saul, and then they get married. Now, if I didn't understand the context of that book, if I just lifted that story out of the Bible and said, "Yes, Bible tells me, so Sam, do," then I would have gone to Hannah's parents with a, "Yeah, And it wouldn't have gone well. And we probably wouldn't be getting married this summer, long story short. But, you know, it's an extreme example, but we kind of do this all the time. We have a verse of the day that pops up on our phone, and we expect it to minister to us and speak to us and change our lives. And it can, but it can do so much more when we understand the context, the meaning. It's not only that, not only do we kind of misinterpret and misunderstand what the Bible's saying, we also miss out on so much of the truth that it has for us. I guess a relatively and moderately spicy take would be if I said, when I read Genesis, I read it, certainly the first parts, the creation story, as poetry. Things that what I know about science and the things that I believe when I read it about the way it's written, for me, that reads as poetry, not as a scientific handbook of how the world was made. And now you might say to me, well, Sam, you're missing out on the truth of the Bible. You're missing out on the facts of the Bible. But for me personally, I want to read it as I think it's written, as poetry, because that speaks to me in just such a deeper level of truth that when I read it as poetry, I don't just see the science of how the world was made. I see the truth of why the world was made, why God created the universe in this act of love and of power. And if I don't understand that, if I'm just reading at a surface level, then, and if I'm not understanding the kind of the context, the genre, all that stuff, I'm missing out on so much of that truth. And so when it comes to dealing with the difficult bits of the Bible or any bit of the Bible, to get real practical with it, last time I spoke about the Bible, I spoke about the Bible Project. You can go on YouTube, just search whatever book you're reading and search for the Bible Project. It'll give you a little introduction and just get you going on some of this stuff. Maybe buy a commentary to read alongside. It doesn't have to be a theology degree. It just has to be enough so that you know, okay, I can see a little bit why this was written, where we're going with it. Anyway, back to the story of our two guys walking along the road. They're walking along the road, and they are just confused about things. How do we understand the scriptures? And just to give you a little recap, if we read back in Luke 24, it says, you know, earlier they were saying to Jesus, the chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death. They crucified him, but we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. These guys have been reading their Bible, and they believed that Jesus was going to redeem all of Israel, and now they're heartbroken. So what does Jesus do? Well, as we read a moment ago, he walks along with them, and he starts to explain the Bible. If we go to the next slide, it says, and beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. He walks along with them, and he starts at the very beginning and says, Moses, the books, the law books, they're about Jesus. Remember, they don't know he's Jesus yet. Is he pretending he's not Jesus? I don't know. But he's probably walking along saying, these, they're about Jesus. These ones, they're about Jesus. Maybe he slips into, accidentally says, these ones, they're about me. I mean, they're about Jesus. Jesus, I'm not Jesus. And he goes on and carries on explaining how all these different books relate to Jesus. I can imagine. Can you imagine just being in on that conversation? Can you imagine walking along with Jesus as he says, and you know, the prophets, when they speak about this one who's going to come and redeem Israel, they're talking about Jesus. And when it talks in the Psalms about how a man is going to be killed and hung on a tree and a spear in his side, but that will redeem all of humanity, that's about Jesus. And back to Moses and the covenant and all these rules that we have, that's about a promise between God and his people. And it's this promise that actually is fulfilled in Jesus. It all comes back to Jesus. What an amazing conversation to be a part of. And so what Jesus is teaching us simply here is that when we read the Bible, we can understand the difficult bits and we get so much more from it if we read it to find Jesus. We read it to find Jesus because he is everywhere. The whole thing is about him. From beginning to end, it all points towards Jesus. Now, I was reading, just finished reading Revelation, and let me tell you, Revelation is well weird. It is just so strange. There's like, you've got angels pouring bowls, you've got winged beasts, you've got all sorts of crazy stuff going on. And I can imagine if you tried to read that without any context, without understanding anything about it, it just sounds nuts. But every morning I read it and I tried to ask the question, okay, where's Jesus in this book? Because I know all of the Bible points towards him. And actually, as I'm reading it, I can see, wow, over and over and over again, this book is telling me that there is evil and darkness in the world, but Jesus overcomes it. And suddenly, that book that I've never really understood comes alive, and it's so much easier to see and apply to my life, because actually, it's just about Jesus. It's pretty simple. I love, he goes on and he gives this kind of lesson to these two disciples on the road, but then later that day he goes and sees his original disciples and he says this to them. He said to them, "This is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms." Then he opened their minds so they could understand the scriptures. He told them, "This is what is written, the Messiah will suffer and rise from the dead on the third day." I love the way that it says that, that he opened their minds. It's almost like as soon as he explained that everything was written was concerning Jesus, everything that they had seen and read about in the Bible, it was all about that moment when he died and rose again. It's like their minds were opened, like skull flicking back or something. It's like the light switch turns on. I imagine it's a bit like when you're going to the toilet in the middle of the night and you get up and you're pretty sure there is a man crouching in the corner of your room. I mean, he definitely is a man crouching in the corner of your room. You walk over, you find the light switch, and it turns out it was your desk chair all along and there was nothing to worry about, right? We've all been there. We've all grabbed a baseball bat and it turns out it's your desk chair. I think it's like this with the difficult bits of the Bible sometimes. Actually, when we start to read the Bible looking for Jesus, it's like a light switch turns on. It's like, oh, that thing that I didn't understand, that thing that just didn't really make sense, when I read it and I think, but it's all about Jesus. It's all preparing the way for Jesus. It just makes more sense. It's like the light switch comes on. I think it's I don't know what I was going to say. I've completely lost my train of thought. Matt, what did you do when this happened to you? You started talking about T-shirts. The countdown theme tune. That's not going to help me here. Anyway, the light comes on, and actually we can start to understand these different parts of the Bible. That's what it was for me reading Revelation, that I don't really get it, but I try and see Jesus in it, and a light comes on, and it makes sense to me. It also helps us to understand when we read the Bible looking for Jesus. It helps us to understand the kind of, puts the rest of the Bible into, how do I say this? Relativity, I guess. It gives us context for how to read the rest of the Bible. You might be saying to me, well, Sam, 2 Timothy tells me that all of the Bible is God-breathed and useful for teaching, correcting, rebuking, training in righteousness, all that stuff. All of the Bible. So don't tell me that it's just about Jesus, because I know there's the Old Testament, that's useful, and everything else. And I would say, you're absolutely right. All of the Bible is useful for teaching, correcting, all that stuff. But not all the Bible is as useful. Okay, another hot take here. Not all the Bible is as useful. What I mean by that is the words of Jesus when he says, John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him shall not die but have eternal life," is more useful and more important than a really obscure law about how to be ceremonially clean in Leviticus. I hope that's not too hot for anyone to handle in here. I hope we're all in agreement about that. It's not that that stuff isn't useful. It's just, it has truth. It can teach us. The Bible tells us it's God-inspired. It's useful for us. But let's not get so worried about it, guys. We can take a chill when it comes to like stressing about it all. It's useful. It's helpful. It teaches us about the context of where Jesus came from, about how we arrived at this place. But the heart of it, the kind of the star of which the solar system of the Bible revolves around is Jesus. And those words that he says in the gospel, that's at the very center of it. So if you're stressed that you don't understand Deuteronomy, don't worry about it. You're okay. Read it at some point, but don't stress. If you want to geek out in Deuteronomy, then go for it. You do that. That's great as well, because it'll be useful. But let's not get too worried about it. And finally, when we read the Bible focused on Jesus, looking for Jesus, not only does it make more sense, not only does it give us a framework to read the rest of the Bible, actually we get to experience something that the followers with Jesus on the road to Emmaus had themselves. So they've been walking along. They come in for dinner. Jesus invites them in. Or they invite Jesus in for dinner, rather. And they still don't know who he is. And then it says that basically when he breaks bread, they realize who he is, which my deduction from that is that Jesus had a really interesting way of breaking bread, like a ninja, fruit ninja chop or something like that, because he breaks the bread and they're like, oh my word, he did the bread thing. It's Jesus. And suddenly they realize. And then as soon as they realize who Jesus is, he vanishes into thin air, which is, again, this is banter Jesus at his very best. On the day that he rose, this is a complete aside, but it just makes me laugh. On the day that he rose from the dead and changed all of history, he goes for an 8-mile walk with two random disciples. They don't know who he is. He breaks some bread. They realize who he is. As soon as the gig is up, he vanishes into thin air. It's brilliant. It's just classic Jesus. It's good stuff. Anyway, he vanishes into thin air. They realize who he is, and they turn to each other, and they say this. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? Were not our hearts burning within us? For me, if you get nothing else from this talk, this is the one thing I'd love for you to take away, that this is the model for me of what it looks like for us to fall in love with reading the Bible, is that we walk alongside Jesus, and we, as we open it, we see him, and we get to encounter him. And as we meet him face to face, he is this incredible revolutionary, like, loving, powerful, totally punk, like turn the world upside down guy. And as we read about him, as we learn who he is, our hearts burn as we encounter him and fall in love with him. That is what happens to us when we read the Bible to encounter Jesus. When we see him on each page, we fall more and more in love with him. And as we fall more and more in love with Jesus, we want to read the Bible more because we want to spend more time with him. We want to see him. We want to learn more about who this person is. I said at the start that there are a few different ways that we can approach the Bible. For some of us, we're the pick and choosers. We take the bits we like and we ignore the rest. Well, honestly, in my experience, when I've done that, I normally end up with a closed Bible. It just, the Bible gets dusty, because if I can't trust that all of it is helpful and that I can believe what's written, if I'm ignoring parts of it, I'm just going to stop reading it eventually. We don't want to have a closed Bible. But I also know that when I've gone down the other road of trying to follow it to the letter, or even like get so deep in the weeds with trying to learn all the intellectual arguments about what the Bible is, and I start reading the Bible to kind of win arguments about this controversial topic and this controversial topic. You know, I wrote my final dissertation at university on homosexuality in the Bible, which is just the hottest take there is going. And it meant that I got loads of questions from people on every side, wanting to talk to me about it, wanting to ask questions about it. Can I take you out for a coffee and talk about it? And honestly, I really didn't want to, because after 3 years of studying and writing this dissertation, I had a crammed brain. My brain was full of the Bible. But all I wanted to do was get back to a place where I could read the Bible and encounter Jesus. Because I would always, always, always take a burning heart over a crammed brain. I would always take encountering who Jesus is rather than just filling my head with more knowledge. And so if you're someone who, when you read the Bible, it kind of scares you and you don't know what to do with it, so you just sort of ignore it, then just Look for Jesus. Just start by saying, I want to encounter the person of Jesus because he will change your life. If you're someone who, when you read the Bible, all you want to do actually is get real intellectual with it and you want to have arguments, that's great. But do not mistake having a crammed brain full of the Bible for having a burning heart where your life is changed. We said at the beginning that the kind of theme of this series is that we can think differently, that we can have different opinions on the Bible, but we have to live differently. And if we are reading the Bible and seeing Jesus on every page, if we're reading the Bible to encounter the person of Jesus, we will live differently because we will be changed. So I want to encourage you that wherever you're at with the Bible right now, whatever your experience has been, if you were to go away and just learn a bit of the context, read it as it was written, and read it to find Jesus, I promise you, it will change your life. The big idea this week is this, that rather than just ignoring the tough bits of the Bible, we need to learn to read it as it was written and read it to find Jesus. As we see Jesus through the Bible, our hearts will burn with an experience of knowing him more and more. I actually would love to finish, if it's all right, with you guys and the pop-ups, everyone watching at home. I'd love to pray for you, because as we were worshiping before, I'll get the band to come back up in a moment. But if you're in a pop-up or in a studio, why don't you stand with me, because we're about to go into worship. But I'd love to start just by praying, because when we were worshiping earlier, I felt God speaking to me. I believe that God speaks to us. And actually, he was saying that there's people who the Bible has been weaponized against them, and they feel that actually their relationship with the Bible is complicated because they feel like either when they read it, it hurts them, or that they've been in church contexts where it's been used kind of weaponized against them. I just want to pray just really specifically for those guys. And then I'll throw in one in for everyone else as well while we're at it. God, I just want to pray for anyone here who actually they've had a painful experience with the Bible where it doesn't make sense for them for who they are, and actually they're confused about what to do with it, how to deal with it. God, I ask by your Holy Spirit, would you just help us again to look past our human frailties and where we get things wrong. And God, would you just take us back to Jesus? Would you show us who he is and where he is in our Bible? And God, I pray for the rest of us as well, that actually we would just grow to love our Bibles more and more, that we would grow to love it because we see you on every single page. Amen.